Okay. Just so we can record also. Okay, so we left off yesterday. We talked a little bit about we gave a little bit of an introduction to the Haggadah, and then we spoke a little bit about Kaddish, about Kiddush and some of the aspects that we find when it comes to Kiddush. So we're going to proceed today with Urchatz. After Kaddish comes Urchatz, so we'll talk about Urchatz just for a moment, and then we'll Karpas. We'll move through the order of the Seder again. Just to remind everyone, this is not halachic in nature. That's not the idea here, but just some thoughts, some ideas, some thoughts about the Haggadah that perhaps we can share with each other and grow from each other. And like I said, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the halachic aspects of the Seder another time. So the second part, as we mentioned, is Urchatz. So Urchatz is, as we know, we wash without a bracha. There are different reasons for the custom. Again, we'll talk a little bit more about that when we talk about this from a more halachic standpoint. Some have the custom that everyone in the household washes. Some have the custom that only the leader of the Seder, the head of the household, washes. Whatever your custom is fine. All the customs are acceptable. The idea behind the washing is that we used to always wash whenever we had any type of produce that came into contact with one of the seven liquids, water among them. And the reason for that is that once you have some, you know, one of the liquids on that produce, so then the produce can contract tumah. So if your hands are tameh, and then it comes into contact with this wet produce, so then your hands, you know, the produce can become tameh. If your hands were tummy. Nowadays, there are some opinions that say that that's still in practice nowadays, and there are some who say that even today, one should wash whenever they eat produce that's wet that has come into contact with one of the seven liquids. Nowadays, most of us do not do that. You know, we wash our fruits and vegetables, and we don't necessarily make sure that they're so you know, so dry before we eat them. And we don't necessarily wash Netilas Yadayim without a bracha, but on the night of the Seder we do it. And I think just the idea behind this is an important one, that you know tonight is really a holy night. It's a night of extra purity. It's a night of extra holiness. It's a night when we want to be doing things a little bit above and beyond. Rav Soloveitchik famously used to call this night, the night of the Seder, the exalted evening. And he actually compared. We spoke about this once in Shul, but he actually compared. The night of the Seder with the night of Kol Nidre, even though the two nights don't seem to have so much in common. Kol Nidre is an awesome night, a scary night, you know, where we're entering the holiest, almost, you know, scariest day of the year. And Pesach is a beautiful night. It's a family-oriented night. It's a night, you know, when we get together and we have a good time and we enjoy the all the songs of the Seder and all the different customs of the Seder. So, you know, at face value, they seem to have very little to do with each other. But Rav Soloveitchik explained that really they're flip sides of the same coin. They're both focusing on elements of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's relationship with us, with Klal Yisrael. The way he described it, and again, this touches a little bit on Kabbalah, which is not my forte, but the way he described it is that the night of Kol Nidre is related to the Midah of Gevurah, of might and power, the awesome nature of Hashem's presence in the world. And the night of Pesach is related to the Midah of Chesed, which is kindness and giving. You know, we'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. But either way, it's an exalted evening. It's an exalted evening, and I think that just the idea that we wash at the Seder, even though normally we don't, it's maybe a chumrah nowadays that we don't necessarily do. But the night of the Seder is a special night. It's a holy night. It's a night of extra purity, of extra holiness. And that's why we wash tonight. And I think that that's a it's a special, you know, as we're going, this is almost like the beginning of the Seder. Of course, you know, we already made Kiddush. But now as we begin the Seder, the very next thing we do is we wash our hands to indicate that elevated level of sanctity, the elevated level of purity. And hopefully that will continue throughout the night. Of course, the next thing we do is Karpas, where we take, and again, all different minhagim, which are all great. Different vegetables or different things that are hadama that we eat for the mitzvah of karpas, and different rimazim and ideas behind karpas, samach perach, that it's, you know, it's the hard work, And you know, so all different beautiful ideas. Some say that some take something specifically green to remind them of Chodesh Ha'aviv, that it's the springtime. One thing I saw a beautiful thought from also from Rav Soloveitchik. There are a couple of different Haggadot that have some of his thoughts, some more halachic and some more hashkafic. So this is from Rabbi Adler's Haggadah, which is a little bit more hashkafic. But he says that, you know, the as we spoke about last night, yesterday I should say, in our introduction, that the mitzvah of the night of the Seder is a mitzvah of Vihigarata Levincha Vayom Hahu Lemor, right? It's a mitzvah of Haggadah, of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's the mitzvah. It's one of the few mitzvos Mida Oraisa. Many of the mitzvahs that we have the night of the Seder are mitzvahs midrabbanan. But Vihigarata Levincha, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, is a mitzvah midoraisa, to retell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So Rav Soloveitchik explains that that's not only done verbally. Of course, the mitzvah is to do it verbally, and we go through much of the Seder Magid, a large chunk of Magid, which we'll see if we have time today. If not, we'll start tomorrow. But a large chunk of Magid is verbal, where we talk about, we literally talk about the story, and we ask questions and answers, which we'll also mention. But says Rav Soloveitchik, the part of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is also not just in the verbal word, not just in the spoken word, but also in the props, also in the symbolism. We eat all these ritual foods. We eat matzah. We eat maror. We eat karpas. Karpas is the first, if you think about it. Kiddush we make every Yom Tov and every Shabbos. Karpas is the first ritual food that we're eating on the night of the Seder. Usually karpas doesn't get so much attention because it's something small. You're not supposed to eat more than a kezias. You know, have in mind the maror. You know, it's all these things. We kind of minimize the importance of the karpas. It's a very quick thing. But in the end, says Rav Soloveitchik, this is the first of the ritual mitzvahs. This is the first of the ritual foods that are eaten at the Seder. And really, this is the whole idea of the Seder. Because when a person, you know, it's one thing to speak about ideas. It's one thing to converse and to express different ideas and thoughts and history and the stories. But it's another thing to actualize it. It's another thing to concretize it. It's another thing to take all that we're talking about and all of these ideas and to put them lemaisa, to put them into something concrete, into a food, into something symbolic. Number one, it certainly helps us focus. It helps us focus on the lessons that we're trying to learn and trying to teach. And it also arouses the curiosity of all of those that are around us, particularly the children. You know, many people joke that everything at the Seder is done, you know, so that the children should ask, right? You know, we do this so that the children should ask. We do that so that the children should ask. And, you know, everybody jokes about it. But in reality, there is a lot of truth to that. Because, again, of course, the whole point of the Seder is not so that the children should ask. But the point of the Seder is to interest the children, is to intrigue the children. And when we change things, here, you know, instead of dipping once, usually we dip the challah in the salt and that's it. You know, the night of the Seder, we don't have salt, you know, but we dip twice. All of a sudden, we're dipping twice. We're dipping the karpas in the salt water. We're dipping the maror in the charoses. You know, we're doing things out of the ordinary. We're changing the routine. And all of a sudden, that, you know, piques people's interest. That intrigues people. Why are we doing that? Why are we doing that? Let's begin by, let's tell the whole story. So it's almost like a hook, you know, like a speaker, when they speak, a motivational speaker, they'll use a hook to get the crowd engaged. You know, an engaging story, an engaging, you know, parable, something to hook the crowd. That's what we're doing here throughout the Seder. We want to pique the interest. And we use these rituals, we use these symbolic foods, number one, for us, so that we can, you know, we can begin to understand, and it can help us focus on the things that we need to, on the things that we need to learn and we need to teach. But it also helps intrigue and helps pique the interest of the children. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz explains that if we think about it, this idea of piquing people's interest and intriguing the people at the Seder so that they will ask questions, so that they will, you know, so that they will come to learn the lessons that we're there to teach, is really throughout the Seder. That's the theme. We're always trying to get people to ask questions. Much of the Seder is in question answer format. The Manishtana, one of the most famous elements of Magid, is itself in question answer format. And that's really the whole purpose, because once people are asking the questions themselves, so then it's something that it means a lot more. If you're not asking the questions yourselves and you're just sitting back, like here, you're sitting back and you're listening to me speak, so some of the things might resonate, some of them might not resonate. You might space out, you might space in. But when you ask the question, when you're invested because you were bothered by something and you're asking the question now and you want to know the answer to that question, that's a whole different level of interest. That's a whole different level of intrigue. And says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, that's the basis of the mitzvahs of the Seder. The next part of the Seder, as we know, is Yachatz. Yachatz also does not get much attention. You know, you break the middle matzah and you put the, you know, you, and you put it, you put one piece away and you keep one piece there, and that's it, and you move on to the next to the next part. One of the reasons why we break the matzah is because of lechem oni. Lechem oni is like lechem oni, the lechem, the bread of a poor person, the bread of a poor man. Poor person only, you know, he doesn't have a whole piece of bread. He doesn't have a whole loaf. He eats, you know, whatever pieces he can scrap together. That's what the poor man eats. So it's certainly reminiscent of that, and reminiscent of the fact that we were avadim and we didn't have, you know, all that we have today. Baruch Hashem. You know, it's almost like, you know, we keep coming back to this COVID-19, you know, crisis that we're in now. But it's almost like, you know, people are being rationed at the supermarket and you can't find all the things that you need. And, you know, you try to go shopping, you want to buy a bottle of Fantastic and you can't find it. It's out of stock from every supplier. So like the simple things that we took for granted, you know, 2-3 weeks ago that were no big deal. You want, you know, you want to buy something, you just go to the store and you buy it, or you go online and you order it, and it'll come, you know, in 2 days. You'll get it at your house. And all of a sudden, these things are hot commodities, and things, these things are hard to come by. So lechem oni is a reminder to us not to take the thing, not to take all these things, you know, in life for granted. Not to assume that we're always just going to have whole loaves. Not to assume that everything in life is just going to be the way that we want it, the way that we see fit. But sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to throw us a broken matzah. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to throw us a curveball for whatever reason we may not understand. But just to recognize that not to take things for granted, and there, really to have a Hakaras HaTov, which we'll talk about also, for all the things in our life that Baruch Hashem are good. One thing also that the broken matzah reminds me of is the Shivrei Luchos. We know that in the Aron, not only did we have the second set of Luchos, which were the complete set, but we had the Shivrei Luchos also. The broken Luchos were also placed in the Aron for safekeeping for eternity. And the question always is, you know, why do we need the Shivrei Luchos? You know, the broken Luchos? Listen, you know, the real Luchos, I understand. You want to keep those in the Aron. That's the Luchos Abris. That's the ultimate in Kedusha. That's, you know, we need that. But why the broken Luchos? The broken Luchos, that reminds us of something painful. That reminds us of the Chet HaEgel. That reminds us of something terrible that we'd honestly, we'd rather forget and rather push out of our memory. So what do we need the broken Luchos for? And I think many of the Mefarshim explain that when it comes to the broken Luchos, the idea is that in Judaism, we don't forget our past mistakes. Chet HaEgel was a terrible mistake. It was a mistake that we made on individual levels. It was a mistake that we made on a communal level. It was a terrible error, a terrible mistake. We don't forget mistakes. That's not what we do as Jews. Part of tshuva is not blotting out the mistakes from our memory. Tshuva is remembering the way that we were, remembering the mistakes that we made, and building upon those mistakes. I once heard an Adam Gadol, a great Talmid Chacham, who said that he's a Rebbe in a certain yeshiva in Israel. I don't want to mention his name, but he said that he didn't like it when the boys would come to Israel and they would get very religious and they would no longer go by their English names. You know, whatever their English name was, you know, Jonathan, they would no longer go by their English names. He said he didn't like it. Why? Not because he did, you know, Lashon HaKodesh, you know, your Shemos HaKadoshim, that's your real name that you got at the bris, that's your real name, of course. But he felt that when the boys would do that, they were almost like blotting out of their memory their previous life. It's like, you know, everything that you know, you come to Israel, you're 17, 18 years old. You know, a lot happened in those 18 years. You can't just blot that out of your memory. Even if you want to change certain things, even if you want to improve upon certain things, that's great. We're always Balei Tshuva. We're always improving. We're always changing. That's amazing, as we should always be growing and always be improving. But you don't just blot out from your memory all of your experiences that you had. You build upon those experiences. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent you those experiences for a reason. He wanted you to be in the circumstances that in which you grew up for a particular reason. Maybe, you know, you're going to be mashpi on people through that. Maybe that's going to be important for your family life going forward. Maybe that's going to be important for your personal life going forward. Whatever the reason is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants that. We don't just blot things out of our memory. We build upon our past. We build upon our past, the good things from our past and the mistakes from our past. And I think that also that you know, the broken matzah almost reminds us of, you know, the same idea as the Shivrei Luchos, that there were plenty of times in history when we were broken. There were times as recently as the Holocaust, as the Shoah. There were times, obviously, before that, the Crusades and the Spanish Inquisition and all the pogroms and all the terrible terrible times that we had before that. And of course, Churban HaBayis, Churban Beis HaMikdash, and going back to our Shibud Mitzrayim, our persecution and slavery in Mitzrayim. There were many times in history that we were broken. We don't forget those things. Baruch Hashem, we're in a very good place now, but we don't forget the past. We don't forget about all those times when we were broken. We break the matzah to remember. Yes, we're sandwiching it in between two whole matzahs, because Baruch Hashem, our lives are whole, our lives are good. Baruch Hashem, our lives are great. But in the middle, we have that broken matzah to remind us of all of those times in history when we were a little bit broken, when our matzah was a little bit cracked, when we had to scrounge around a little bit and we couldn't, you know, we didn't have all the luxuries and all the great things that Baruch Hashem we have today. And we learn from those experiences and we build on those experiences. And that makes us stronger today. So I think perhaps that's some of the lessons of the broken matzahs. It's 3:31, so I'm going to let you go back to your day. And Amir Hashem, tomorrow we'll pick up with Magid. I'm going to unmute everyone. Feel free to chime in or feel free to leave, whatever works for you. Okay. Yishakoach.